Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Deep Dive. Today, the tables are turning as we talk to Pumpkinberry about the games that shaped her.
We do our best to avoid any particular spoilers, so without further ado, let's descend. So today we're talking about games that shaped me. I'm really excited about this series.
I'm excited as well. Usually we have, like, you know, at least a little bit of a discussion before we start. That is just like, hey, what are you going to talk about today? Oh, okay, I'm going to talk about this. And we didn't do any of that, so I'm ready to be, like, totally surprised and flabbergasted.
I don't know if you will be surprised or flabbergasted. I feel like when I thought of them, you know, I wanted to go with what instantly sprung to mind, mm-hmm. you know, when I said, okay, what are the top games that shaped me? And I feel like none of them are going to surprise you, but here we go. We're going to try anyway.
You've surprised me before. I remember specifically seeing, like, your rack of PSP games and seeing, like, Dissidia up there. And I was like, what? No way.
Yeah, Dissidia was a lot of fun, but I mainly because I loved Final Fantasy as well.
Yeah.
So it was really exciting to see that come out. But yeah, I had one of the first generation PSPs, which is worth a lot of money now because I think it's like you can hack it.
Oh, really?
The later editions, you couldn't hack it.
We have two of them sitting here.
Oh, yeah.
I think one's white, actually.
Which means that when you come to visit, we can play Dissidia because I have two copies of Dissidia, so we can play together.
I played the PlayStation 4 one, the new one that came out. When it was in open beta, I played that.
Oh, I didn't even know there was one for...
Yeah, it's really good.
Okay, so I'm going to start with games that shaped me back in when I was a Wii Sprite. And I'm going to start with two that you probably aren't going to be surprised by.
Okay.
I'll list three. So I'm not going to be able to sum it into only three games like you did so eloquently, but I'm going to try to not... let this be an hour long. But the first three that came to mind as a young sprite were Streets of Rage.
Uh-huh.
Yes, that's the first one. Yeah, okay. Streets of Rage, Echo the Dolphin, and Sonic CD. The CD version, not necessarily Sonic 2 or Sonic 3.
Right.
And then Sonic for the Game Boy. There was a Sonic 3 for the Game Gear. But yeah, but that game was super, super difficult. And I remember when I first got into games, it's because our dad was also really into technology and gaming, and he had been playing Dungeons and Dragons, you know, for a very long time, and loved games like, you know, eventually loved games like Baldur's Gate and things like that. But at this time, he just thought it was interesting to see where the technology was going. Like, he had one of the first computers, you know, the first computer game that I played was Playroom. I think it was called Playroom. It was on a floppy disk. It was literally just like mouse and other animals in a room, and you just move things around. That was the first game I ever played, was Playroom. And then when the technology came out for consoles, really, you know, he wasn't a huge fan of Nintendo. I think we had one, but later. The first one that I really remember having was the Sega Genesis, but the CD version. So you could do a Genesis cartridge and also the CD.
Right.
And the first games I remember were Golden Axe, and because we had a CD that had a whole bunch of different games on it. So that CD had Golden Axe, Revenge of Shinobi, Streets of Rage. And those were the main ones I remember playing other than the Sonic CD and Echo the Dolphin. So that whole set was like, that was my childhood. I played those games and I didn't know that they were hard games. So because I didn't realize that they were difficult, like Shinobi is also notoriously difficult. And I don't think I could ever get past level 3 or something insane. It was very, very early on in the game where I got stuck. But no one ever told me that it was super difficult or that, you know, so it just didn't occur to me that it was a cool thing. Like, you know, that I was doing something that not many other people would be able to do until I was much older. And somebody said, wow, I could never get to this point in this game and I could never beat Sonic for the Game Gear. And I was like, I did. It was, there's a specific level. I remember it was like the Robotnik pinball level and it was so hard. And I would just do it over and over and over and over and over again. I would sit there for hours and I would just try the level over and again. And I didn't get salty. I didn't get angry. And it was just kind of a neat I feel like it shaped my gaming experience because nobody said this is really hard. I didn't get mad and be like, man, this is too difficult.
Yeah.
Nobody else can do it, so I can't do it either. I just kept going saying, well, this is a game and you're supposed to be able to beat it. So I'm just going to keep trying until I do.
It's funny to watch you play games now and to sort of see that bleed through. Just yeah, thinking where of like a
I
couple
have to
of examples
stop myself.
Like Prey. You know, when you were playing through Prey yeah. and you were doing like a no Psy mod run, which is basically this like, I guess, I haven't played the game myself yet, which is terrible because I've been sitting on it for like a year and a half. But they're like these modifications that the game gives you. The game gives you new abilities to defeat the new enemies that you encounter, right? And you were just like, nope, yeah. I'm not mm-hmm. using these. And what was your reason for not using them?
Well, it the reason for not using them was because if I were there and I try to immerse myself when I'm playing a game. Uh-huh. So it creeped me out. They creep me out. I don't trust them. I feel like I'm being experimented on. And I mm-hmm. feel like if I do use them narratively in the story, something terrible is going to happen. Like I am going to turn into one of these alien creatures,
yeah.
Which I think I've been spoiled on that, but I don't care. I still just didn't want to use them. But as it turns out, that is basically playing the game on extra hard mode
yeah.
without any of these modifications. So, and people were like, you're crazy. You know, you're not going to be able to do this. And I've been able to do it so far. And I just don't let that kind of stuff bother me too much.
Yeah.
But yeah, I commonly accidentally make games harder for myself. And I don't realize what I'm doing until it's like midway through. And I'm like, why did I think this would be great? Like, for example, Dead Space 2 right now. I'm playing it on a super hard difficulty. And that was dumb. I shouldn't have done that. the game's very difficult. But it's fine. It's good.
We talked about that a little bit last week, you know, when I sort of told my story a little bit and how like I felt like for a while that if I wasn't playing the games on the hardest difficulty that I could, like it's like I wasn't actually playing the games. You know what I mean? It didn't count.
Yeah.
So what do you think is actually what drives you to do that? Because you're somebody that is so very much there for the story and for the, you know, for the narrative and for the characters, and playing a game on an easier difficulty is going to let you experience that without any of the headache that comes along with that. So like, what do you think that
yeah.
there's something else that maybe sort of drives you to go beyond just pushing yourself and basically making something more difficult than it needs to be?
Oh boy. There's so much to unpack in that statement. Yeah, I think if you could say a character flaw, or maybe not a flaw, but a character aspect of me, I think it's my gut reaction to that is I do a lot of narrative story-driven games where, you know, you might consider them to be walking simulators. So it's nice every once in a while to challenge myself mm-hmm. and to remember what I loved most about gaming when I started. So Echo and Streets of Rage, I mean, there are stories in there that I really enjoyed. But what I also enjoyed when I was a kid, and like same with Shinobi. Shinobi's a platformer and there's a story in there too. But I wasn't necessarily in it for the story. I was in it for the gameplay and mm-hmm. to challenge myself and brain puzzles and things like that. I always really enjoyed. So for example, when, you know, we were playing Prey. Oh, my cat's sneezing. Of course, that's what's happening right now. So for example, when we were playing Prey and I accidentally challenged myself and I realized it, I knew, okay, I can go back and maybe fix this, or I can just now start using these mods so that it's easier. But Prey just, it feels like a game that should be done on maybe a little bit of a challenge. I don't want to walk through it for some reason. And it was the same thing with The Last of Us. I put that on a harder difficulty because I put that one on a harder difficulty because I was playing it on the PlayStation.
Yeah.
And I grew up on consoles. So I felt very comfortable doing it that way. And I just kind of wanted a little bit of a challenge. I don't know. Sometimes I just don't want it to be super easy for myself. And I don't know why. I think maybe instinctively, sometimes I know that if I give myself more of a challenge, I will enjoy the end more. I will feel more invested. Yeah, I will feel like fair. I worked hard to get to that end of that story. So maybe I'm putting myself through a little bit of stress and anxiety mm-hmm. to kind of relate to the characters maybe. at least in some games, and in other games I just like to punish myself, let's be real. I'm just like, let's make it super hard for no reason.
So I'm curious, can you recall like maybe an experience that you had with a game in your past where you were just trying and trying and trying and you couldn't get past something, and then you finally had like that aha moment that helped you figure out what you needed to do? Was there anything that like specific that maybe you learned from a previous game that you were able to apply to a game that you've maybe played semi-recently, like within the last couple of years?
That is a difficult question, because I feel like when I was younger, at least with those games that we've talked about already, I was really young, and I didn't get past them. Like, I didn't beat Echo the Dolphin until this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I it never bothered me. It never haunted. There was only one game that ever haunted me that I couldn't beat the ending to or get further in. And that was the fucking Indiana Jones game, The Tale of Atlantis, because I got there was a bug, though. So right. I didn't realize why I got stuck. I could never understand. But because that game is presented to you in a puzzle format, like with riddles and things, I just thought I was too stupid to figure it out. And it drove me crazy. You know, every couple of years I would remember that game and be like, why? What the fuck was the answer to that puzzle? I thought I had it. And then when I found out that there was a bug on the exact level where I got stuck, even if you had the right answer, you couldn't proceed. I got so mad. I was like, you know what? One day I'm going to boot that game up and I'm going to play through it and I'm going to beat that game so hard. Remember when we said this podcast was going to be clean? Yeah. Right. And I was like, no, I'm going to go through there and I'm going to stomp that. But yeah. So really, to answer your question, I don't really know if there's anything other than the standard, you know, typical game mechanics that you just learn by playing games, like, mm-hmm. okay, you know, they're pointing at something here in this point and click adventure. I feel like now I've learned a lot more about how point and clicks work than I did when I was younger, because I didn't play a lot of point and click adventure games growing up. It was, you know, a lot of platformers, and then eventually, you know, RPGs. Or JRPGs. And point and click really didn't start happening until we started streaming. So, I don't really know if I have an answer to that, other than that, you know, just typical game mechanic things that you pick up, like, you know, oh, they've told me to go here and this is in bold, so I gotta find this on the map, or, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Nothing really stands out to me.
I gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. So after Streets of Rage and Echo the Dolphin and all that stuff, we played, and I mentioned this last time, so I'll be super short, with this part, but, we played Final Fantasy VII, my dad and I. Oh, actually, I will tell you a funny story, which I don't know if I mentioned last time we did the podcast, and we may have to cut this out because it's too personal, but I'm going to tell you this story anyway. So I avoid fighting games now.
Mm.
That's like the one game that gives me major anxiety to play.
Okay.
Because my dad, when we used to play Streets of Rage with my sister, me, and my dad sometimes would come in and play this. He gets super salty and ragey, like if something bad happens or if we die. And if you didn't know, in Streets of Rage, like, it's one of those, if you die a certain number of times, like, that's it, you wipe and you have to go all the way back to the beginning.
Yeah.
And he would get so mad and he would like shout and scream, and a couple of times he even threw the controller. And then that happened a couple of times with some early fighting games like Mortal Kombat, or, you know, I think it was Virtua Fighter, actually. I don't even think it was Mortal Kombat. I think it was Virtua Fighter. And I just, it stuck with me so badly that if I am winning in a fighting game, I get really nervous. I get really upset and anxious, and I do not have a good time. So I can play maybe two or three rounds of mm-hmm. a fighting game, and then I'm like, I got, that's it. I'm done. Thank you for playing. That was great. Especially if I like win. If I win at all, I'm like, no. If I'm getting stomped, I'm having a great time.
But that's amazing.
Which is a bummer, because Mr. B loves fighting games. So every once in a while I try. Like, I really loved Soul Calibur, but it's also because they had like character creation and playing dress up in that game pretty much. So yeah. I got to like ease myself into the idea of fighting by making a really cool character. But if I won at all in that fucking ladder, I was like, okay, that's it. I'm done. I gotta be done. And I loved Blaze Blue. I really enjoyed that game, but that's another game where if I was winning too much, it just gives me anxiety and I just can't do it. Sorry, Dad. I love you, but I know you didn't know that this is how it was going to affect me, but it did. And I get nervous. So that's just a funny tidbit. So then after that, My dad, my sister, and I played through Final Fantasy VII on the computer. I don't think we ever finished it, actually, because I used to split the half the year with my mom and half the year with my dad.
Right.
And then when I went home to my mom's, I picked up my first JRPG, two first JRPGs, which were Final Fantasy VIII and Suikoden II. And those two games changed my life, which sounds super dramatic, but I don't care. I'm going to roll with it. So Final Fantasy VIII changed my life because it was my first JRPG where I had the controller and I felt connected to Japan mm-hmm. for the first time since we left. And I just let myself get really into it. And it was very therapeutic for me to just say, I'm playing this, you know, really cool Japanese, you know, RPG game, and this is great. And I love JRPGs now. And so, yeah, I got really into that. And it was also at a time where, you know, I got super into Gundam Wing, and, you know, I just was really letting myself mourn the loss, I guess, of my culture, where I came from. Yeah, so that changed my life. And Suikoden 2 changed my life because I it broke my heart. I cried. And I remember crying in Echo the Dolphin, but then not really in any other games before that. I didn't cry in Final Fantasy VIII, but I cried so hard in Suikoden because a couple of really traumatic things happened in that game. I had just never seen it done before. I had never seen that done before. And the stories are just super... It's a really deep game for what appears to be a regular JRPG, fun, collect characters. It's got a really dark story. And if you guys didn't know, my sister and I sat down and recorded a 4-hour podcast episode of Suikoden 2 where we just like completely broke, but we had a mic issue. So we had to scrap the entire episode. So hopefully one day I can go back and revisit that game with her, because there is so much depth and so much that they take these 15-year-old protagonists through that, you know, changed me. But the main thing that sat with me with that game is I played Suikoden 2 before walkthroughs online were a thing. Mm. There was a part where I got stuck for like 2 months at some boss battle because he just wiped me every single time. I remember going back and saying, okay, well, I'm just going to like go run around and I'm just going to have to revert my save and try to go through and beat him again. So I think I couldn't even revert my save. I think I had to go back and play the whole game again. Like up until that boss to try to beat the boss. And eventually I did. And then I beat the game and I got an ending and I wept my eyes out because I was not expecting it and I was traumatized and whatnot. And then fast forward like 4 years and I'm having a conversation in high school with somebody who has played Suikoden 2 and I freak my shit. And I'm like, I love that game. Nobody's ever heard of that game. And they go, yeah. And then blah, 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 at the end. And I was like, wait,
oh,
what?
No.
that's not the end I got. And they were like, oh. And in that moment, the two of us who are super passionate about this game that nobody else has ever fucking played or heard of realized there are multiple endings to that game. The conversation literally stopped there. And we both walked away and we went home and we started a new game. And then we're like, did you start a new game last night? Yeah, I did. You know, and... Yeah. And so then in that moment, I realized, holy shit. So at that time, I was able to like look it up on the internet and see, oh, yeah, there are multiple endings. And here's how you get them. It's, you know, they're great about spoilers. They don't tell you what happens in each ending. But in that moment, I realized I had a bad ending. And in that moment, I realized games can have multiple endings and multiple versions of stories. And oh, man. So that was life changing. Yeah. Mind blown. And that was great. And so, but that also started my idea of my playthrough, where I will play a story driven game like that. That's really long one time. Or if I play it again, I make the same choices because that was my playthrough. That was my experience and my story. And if I want to experience it a different way, I will watch someone else's playthrough now on Twitch, but then on YouTube or, you know, things like that.
I don't know, man. It's just like I hear that and, you know, I get it. Like I'm right there with you. And I generally end up doing the same thing, but it's more so just like a factor of time. Like I don't necessarily want to sink 16 hours into another Life is Strange playthrough just so I can see the other ending. But I mean, doesn't that kind of mean that maybe your sense of disbelief is hard to activate because you can't put yourself into a scenario that isn't what your natural reactions would be, I guess, if that makes sense?
Yes and no. Like I eventually did a Renegade run of Mass Effect
which was really hard. I remember
it was very difficult for me because I was so emotionally attached to the characters and I didn't want to hurt them in any way, but I actually enjoyed my Renegade playthrough more than my Paragon playthrough when I finally was able to do it.
It's another challenge, right?
It was a challenge, but I should also clarify by saying my version of a Renegade run was not just auto choosing Renegade every single time. I was trying to do something that was like that gray area where I would choose Renegade a lot of the time, but sometimes I would choose Paragon, which is what I did in my Paragon run. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did a Paragon run. And when I did my playthrough, I chose some Renegade options because that's just kind of how I am. And when I think I was just trying to be true to me, it wasn't really a true Paragon run. Mm-hmm. I've never really done a straight Paragon or a straight Renegade. But when I did my Renegade, I was like, okay, I'm going to be pragmatic now. This is going to be pragmatic playthrough, not a Renegade, really. So I would make those tough decisions and I would try to shut that emotion part of me down to be like, what's for the greater good? Let's be realistic here. And what would you do if this were real life and these were, you know, you didn't know in the back of your mind it was a game and it would all work out in the end. And that was really difficult for me. But yeah, that was great. So actually, Mass Effect is one of the games that's on my shape life-changing thing. So but before we do that, let's back up a little bit to two games, which I don't think you're going to expect. I was always a huge gamer after, you know, Final Fantasy VIII and Suikoden II. I, you know, digested. That was it. That was my hobby. It was playing games. I would. Oh, boy. So my home life was a little weird. I just realized to explain this, I have to explain something else. So my home life was a little bit strange when my parents separated and my mom remarried. I spent a lot of time in my room for several hours at a time. Like we're talking 14, 15 hours at a time. I would have dinner in there. It was just like, yeah, that was just it. And that's all we're going to say about that. But because of that, I would just plow through games, Chrono Cross, like just like tons and tons of games. And I mostly gravitated towards, JRPGs. And then when I moved out on my own, it was the one thing that I allowed myself to have as my, I don't know how to say like self-care, was a console. Mm-hmm. I was always like, I will always have a PlayStation if I can afford it. Like that's like, or a gaming thing, because this is really important to me. So I didn't have a computer for a long time, but I had a console where I could play games on. Like I played Devil May Cry when that came out. I played that on fucking Dante Must Die mode. Like I loved it. It was great. It was like, I digested any games I could. And then I took like a 7-year break from games where I didn't touch them, which is like crazy if you think about it. And I think the last games that I really played before this break was Katamari Damacy and Getaru Man. Mm. And those two games were games that I feel like really, really shaped me in a way that I remember Katamari bringing me so much joy in a time of great stress. And same thing with Getaru Man, because they're absurd. They're both absurd.
Yeah.
They're both crazy Japanese games, and I loved them. And then when I took my really long break, it was because, you know, stress. It was like, yeah, life things. I still had a PlayStation. I just fell out of that. I fell out of gaming. I would play things on occasion, but not the way that I used to.
Mm-hmm.
Like I would still make time for things like Silent Hill 2, which is also on my list, or the new Silent Hill games when they came out. But then they came out with one for the Xbox, so I didn't bother. Like, I think the last one I played for the Silent Hill franchise was The Room. That's the last one I really made time for. And then I don't know if it was depression or what, but I just took like a huge stint away from gaming. And then the first game that got me back into it was Mass Effect. So Mr. B and I, when we first got together, we lived in like a 300 square foot apartment while we were, you know, because I moved to Canada and it was like crazy. That is a tiny fucking living space. Let me just tell you that right now. For two people, that is fucking tiny. One of our favorite things to do, because we were both huge gamers, is we would sit on the futon / couch that we had and we called it our raft, and we would just like sit on this. We would sit there and we would just play games together on this really tiny TV.
That's adorable.
Yeah. And I have very fond memories of that. It was like a great, great experience, even though everything else was just kind of like tight, cramped living space. But Yeah, so we would play games together, and one person would have the controller, and you know, the other would watch. And I enjoy watching. That's when I realized I enjoyed watching, because most of the time my sister would want me to have the controller, especially for scary levels and things like that. But oftentimes we would switch. Like, I watched her play through all of Spyro. So anyway, we would do this, and he kept trying to say, you need to play Mass Effect. You'd love it. It's space. It's like an RPG. It's not a JRPG, but you'd love it. And I fought him on it for a little while. And then eventually I started playing it, and it reminded me why I love games so much. And I got lost in that world. And I was like, wow, this is fantastic. Like, I can't believe I've been away from games for so long. And then I played that. And then I took another huge break from games after that, because I was trying to like do photography. Yeah. I was trying to start my own business, and I couldn't justify playing game. I would feel guilty if I was playing a game instead of trying to better my business, which is just so fucked up and a bummer. Don't feel guilty about taking time for yourself. If you're listening to this and you're like, wow, I do the same thing, don't feel guilty about taking some time for yourself. It's really important, especially if you do creative things. Yeah, you
have to take care of yourself before you can take care of anything else. You know, like, that's the first step.
I know, but I would just be plagued with this guilt. And so then I didn't play again for another like many years. And then the first game that brought me back to that was Twitch. And this is going to be real fucked up, but I'm very grateful for it. So the first game that brought me back was Undertale, because I was playing it for Sister Bear, because we always used to play games together, and she really wanted to see me play this game. So I did it on Twitch for the 24-hour Extra Life charity marathon that my coworker friends were doing. So I joined their team, and I was like, cool, I'll just play this and Sister Bear can watch, and it'll be great. So I did that, and it was great. I loved the game. It was really good. But then after that, I was like, I'm going to play another game she wants me to play, which I think was Five Nights at Freddy's. And then I decided to play The Cat Lady. And that game is another game that really shaped me, because it reminded me why I love games, but also it brought, there were like 30 people in the Twitch stream with me watching this game. And when we were done, we all sat down and shared a really profound experience about the game, because it was a very therapeutic game. And I realized I loved this and I wanted to do this. It became work, sort of. It became a work element. Like, I can do this and then also maybe make this a job. And it allowed me to play games again without feeling guilty, which is an issue. That's an issue. Like, I should be able to play games yes. without feeling guilty, period. But at least it helped me get there in the beginning. Like, it helped bridge that gap for me, where I didn't have to feel so guilty about taking time away from when I should be editing to, you know, playing a couple of games here and there. You know, I kept saying, oh, it's like a side job that I do, you know, it's fun. I do this for fun, but also like it's a little bit of supplemental income in the winter months when I'm not doing weddings and stuff. So, yeah. And then of course, obviously that just grew and grew, but, yeah, that's kind of how it helped me bridge the gap between allowing myself to play it guilt-free versus just for fun. And now I can say that I can play games just for fun, which is great.
It is.
I don't have to be streaming to play them, is what I mean. So yeah, that's real good. But those are it. That's it. That's like my life story as far as games go. She didn't really mention the PSP and all of that, but yeah. I've always been really, 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 really into games. And I think now that I'm thinking back on the timeline, I think the stint in games didn't really happen until I did the wedding photography. So I think I'm remembering that wrong. I think I played games solidly all the way up through until I moved to Canada, or maybe a year prior to leaving for Canada.
Well, I wonder if it has something to do with how invested you became in the games that you played, and it was just like, maybe it was just like too much to handle on top of everything else that was going on in your life at the same time, you know, trying to build a business and, you know, moving your entire life to a different country, which is also very stressful, you know, clearly. So it's just,
yeah. And I guess I just didn't want to be that person that just sat at home and played games, you know, because when I first moved, I wasn't legally allowed to work.
Right.
So, and that was the first time in my adult life that I ever had to rely on someone else, like, for shit like buying
it's
deodorant.
So hard.
And I hated it.
Oh my
it's
god,
it's so
the
hard
worst.
And I hated it. I It was awful. And that's just because, you know, me, I want to be self-sufficient. I want to not have to rely on anybody, which is also an issue that I need to work through, I realize. But yeah, it was super stressful. And I just couldn't be the person that sat there and played games. So I immediately started working on, you know, I would take pictures and stuff and start blogging to kind of get my brand ready for when I was legally allowed to work, which is what happened. And then I was legally allowed to work, and I just couldn't get back into that place where I didn't feel like total shit every time I played a game. Oh, I forgot a game. Okay. There are two games that I should add onto this list. Guild Wars, my very first MMO, and Guild Wars 2. During my long stint away from games, that is the only game that remained installed on my computer.
Interesting.
And sometimes I would allow myself to, boot it up guilt-free. But yeah, and I did try to play, God, what was that one with Picard? Patrick Stewart did the voice. Oblivion. I did try to play Oblivion when it came out, and I got like 45 minutes in, and then the same issue happened. I just got, you know, very stressed and felt very guilty about it. But yeah, so Guild Wars remained, and Guild Wars 2 remained on my computer, and I would occasionally allow myself to play those guilt-free. I really enjoyed those games.
So what about those do you think was different?
I don't want to say mindless, because that's terrible, but they are mindless. I got to... Guild Wars 2... is exceptionally beautiful to look at. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely gorgeous. And I could create my characters, and I could run around, and nobody knows me. Nobody knows I'm playing the game. You know, I could just boot it up. I don't have to go through a story. There's no... Yeah, you might be right, actually. And I'm realizing it right in this very moment. No offense. Guild Wars 2 does not have a very good story. So that might be it. I didn't have to spend any excess emotion that I didn't have for myself on a game. Whereas every other game that I had played, I either played on super hard difficulty, so it required something from me, or I played it for a good story, which also required some emotional output.
Yeah,
holy shit.
I'm having this sort of this train of thought about how, you know, you have always been the kind of person who feels the need and the desire to basically share their entire life, right?
Yeah. Oh,
and
yeah.
And then having this guilt when you sit down and play a game that it's like, oh, I should be doing this instead. And I'm curious as to how being a person that appreciates being able to share as much of your life as possible at all times, with sort of maybe like a feeling of everybody always being able to see you, even when you're not the one sort of initiating that by putting out a blog post or video or whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
And then Guild Wars 2 being okay, because you also said you're not you when you play Guild Wars, you're somebody else. You take on, you know, sort of a different persona during that time. And yeah. I find that really, really curious and interesting to sort of think about that progression and how those things relate to each other.
Yeah, that's insane. My mind is blown, and I'm feeling very, very vulnerable right now.
Welcome to Deep Dive.
Yeah, welcome to Deep Dive. There was also during that time period, it's really funny that you bring up the sharing your life online and that kind of like no one being able to see me. So during that stretch away from games, yes, I was blogging my life online, but also I had a weird like, I'm going to use the term stalker, because that's what it was. But I hesitate to talk about it because I feel like it's hard to explain. But it was a very strange single white female situation, which I only know about because I've told people this story. And then they say, oh, single white female. I've never actually seen the movie. I don't know. But I know that that's the reference people make when I tell them the story. I was living with a group of people at the time. One of my ex-boyfriends, anyway, was friends with this girl. And, you know, we sort of became friends. We bonded over mutual things that we liked, like our, you know, taste in music and then Japan and also games and photography and things like that. And we bonded and we had started becoming friends. And then her group of friends, we all started living together. So they were my roommates at the time. And then there was this weird falling out that they had, like the group leader there had a falling out with her for some reason. I can't remember what it was, but she kind of didn't obviously take it that well, and then got it in her head that I was replacing her, or I was trying to replace her, or I was, yeah, it was just, it Yikes. Was very strange. She was also journaling. I'm not going to call it blogging, because blogs weren't really a thing at this time. They were, but they were tiny. People weren't getting paid the way you think of bloggers now. They weren't influencers, nothing like that. It was literally just you're sharing your fucking recipes with shitty pictures. Like, that's just like what it was. It was very early stages of blogging. So I'd been journaling my entire life online since, you know, 99 on diaryland.com. It still exists. People go check it out. It's insane. It's a blast from the past. But anyway, so I moved into the blogging space after a while with my own cool domain name, which I thought was super neat. And she was also blogging at that time. But it became really weird, because in this obsession that she had, in that I was replacing her in this group of friends, and I was living with them, she would be reading my blog constantly and watching what I was doing. And then she would tell that, like, the one person in the group that was still talking to her, she would be like, oh, you know, PB's doing this thing, which is like copying me. And it was just very strange, because it's like, yeah. And it was almost strangely incestuous in a way, because if I can use that word to talk about this, because when I found out she was like using my blog sort of against me to be like, hey, this is like, I did this first and she's doing this. And I knew it wasn't true. I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, there's just a specific band that she said I stole from her, which is super dramatic and crazy, but it's like, it's so stupid, but it's a cry of somebody who lost all of their friends. So I was very empathetic to it also. So, you know, no one wants to be cut out from an entire group, but this one leader of the group had the ability to just like, had a falling out. Now no one else will speak to her. And that's terrible. That's terrible to do friends you've had for 6 or 7 years. That's awful. So my bleeding heart empathized with her, which was a mistake. But once I found out that she was using that against me, and I knew it wasn't true. Like, I remember hearing about this particular band she was talking about, which was like a Norwegian really cool band. I heard about it from one of my other friends. And anyway, I just knew it wasn't true. So then I began reading her blog to be like, what is she saying? Like, what is she saying about me? And then I was doing it back. I was like, it wasn't until years later that I realized that we were doing the fucking same thing, looking for a penny and finding one, you know, where it was like, yeah, we are two fucking white girls that had the same interests. Obviously, we're going to be interested in the same things. So if you think that it's, you know, it was just like one of those, you see it and there it is. Synchronicities, full of it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I didn't realize it until years later, but it also became an obsession of mine. I became worried about what I would share online, or what would get turned against me, what words would get used. I remember specifically one time, the first time I like dyed my hair a crazy color, was when I was what, 15, 16, back in high school, well before I knew this girl. And I tried every color under the sun. And I remember one time I dyed my hair and my roommate came in and was like, oh, that's an interesting color. And I was like, did this bitch fucking just dye her hair? And I didn't know about it. And I just happened to pick the same fucking color. Sure enough, sure as shit, that's exactly what happened. So I just like, it just became this obsession of mine where I was like terrified of being watched and stuff being used against me. And eventually I was like, you know what? I can't be friends with you guys, because this is like chaotic for me. And this girl is like actually going on to online communities I'm on and like friending everybody that I'm friends with. It got to the point where I was moving into the photography space as a living. Yeah. And I got on Flickr and she would be in all of my groups. And then randomly I'd get comments on a picture that I took being like, ooh, this is like fucking similar. It's that whole like you're copying this person thing. And it was awful. And then this was during all of this. So yeah, I guess the idea of not being watched and finding safety in a game like Guild Wars was a big deal for me at the time. It's crazy. And I remember, this is a crazy fucking awful story. I remember finding someone on Flickr using her pictures, her selfies and whatnot, her portraits, to sell nudes. And I messaged her about it because I'm a bleeding heart. And I was like, I know that we are not on good terms, but this sucks. This sucks. And I would hate for somebody posting fucking nudies to be using my image and my face to do so. So yeah, I messaged her about it. It didn't go well. But yeah, anyway, it was just kind of like, yeah, it's just kind of, and I'm really glad it's over and behind me, but yeah, there's a lot to that story where like years later, they'd still be, and I ended up, oh my God, last year? Somebody asked me, somebody in that old circle sort of related to, but not one of my roommates, asked me to go shoot their wedding. And my first thought was, she's probably going to get invited to that wedding. Do I want to do this? Do I want to go there? Do I want to do this? And I didn't want to, but I was, you know, I have bleeding heart, and this friend of mine is a friend of mine. So I was like, you know what? What are the odds? You know, I think I know she lives like halfway across the country now. So it's probably fine. She's probably not going to trek all the way back here for this wedding. Mm. Oh, man, that was the hardest fucking job I've ever taken. But I was professional about it, and I took her picture dancing, and I just like, you know, stayed away from her and whatnot, but she was there. But yeah, it was just like, I was terrified the entire time that she was just going to reignite. Cause I ended up going to see somebody, first of all, police, and also a therapist after this happened, because shortly after, my ex then also broke into my apartment and was like stalking me and stuff like that. So I just finally went to go see somebody about how to handle stalkers and whatnot. The first big piece of advice they gave me was, when they latch on to you, it is forever, but it doesn't mean that they will always be like at you. But if you allow them to see you again or be reminded of your existence, it reignites and they will just like latch back on. So you have to be very careful that like when you cut off or when you, you know, remove yourself from the internet, because that's what I had to do. I cannot believe this is the most personal deep dive I've ever had. And I'm so sorry that I'm just like talking your ear off, but it was the most traumatic thing. So I'd been journaling my entire existence online for, you know, since 98 or 99. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And when this happened with her and also with my ex, the advice was fucking remove yourself from the internet. You need to delete everything. You need to delete all of your journals. You can't blog online anymore. You can't take pictures of your everyday life and share it. You just can't do this. And
that's garbage.
I didn't know what to do. It's true, though.
I know.
It's true. I, you know, like, especially, and that's where my paranoia began with, like, taking pictures and making sure there aren't any street signs behind me. You know, like it's for all from this, like, this sit down with the police officers and this therapist, you know, that were like, here's what you got to do. And, you know, like you need to take this seriously because he's broken into your home and like taking pictures of you sleeping. Like you gotta be smart about this. So I was like, okay, a move to Canada is not big enough, is what they said. So I was like, okay, all right then. But yeah, anyway, so that was traumatizing for me, and I felt like I had lost part of my identity.
Oh yeah.
Oh, it was just terrible. And then eventually, I just started doing it again anyway, and because I couldn't stay away from it, and then it became part of my job. But you know. Nothing has really ever come from that. Obviously, it's not like they ever found me again or reignited or anything like that. But as far as I know, oh, dear God. But yeah, so.
Oh, boy.
But yeah, oh, boy. Yeah. So that's the games that shaped me.
Wow.
Yeah, maybe this entire episode should be a bonus episode. No, I'm okay, but you know what? This should totally be the season fucking finale. Are you kidding me? I need a month break after this.
Oh my God.
Oh God. Yeah.
I had a thought before we started because you had mentioned potentially, and you know, I don't know if this is gonna happen or not officially, you know, taking like a few weeks off of the podcast at a certain point. Just, you know, throughout the holidays, and
yeah,
so we can get a good backlog going again. And you were like, this one can't be the season finale though. Like it's not going to be good for that. And in my head, I was just like, I don't know, man, like we're sitting here talking about like the development of your life. Like it's probably going to go somewhere. And it did.
Yeah, it did. You were right. You were right. You have a sixth sense for this kind of stuff.
I try. I'd like to think that I do, at least at certain points. I have a question for you, though.
Yeah. go for it.
When we talk about games that shaped us, and you know, when you and I had this conversation, mm-hmm. and you know, about mine as well as yours just now, you know, we're talking about games from our past, right? Games from when we were growing up. What about like recently? What about within the last, you know? And I know you did mention the Cat Lady, which was fairly recent, and so I wouldn't want to lump that in there. But maybe let's say like within the last year, year and a half or so, you know, when streaming started picking up really big and, you know, you started being introduced to more and more games, you know, weekly, if not daily.
Yeah.
What are some recent titles that have shaped you as adult PB?
Okay. I have some, but also I should tell you Sims 2, I think. Is it Sims 2? Yeah. Sims 2 was another big one when I was introduced to that. In 2009 or so, like after my photography had taken off and I was already in Canada, and so maybe 2010 or 11, and I was kind of I was getting back into blogging, and that whole like stalker craziness was behind me. I was introduced to Sims 2 and farming and like becoming a business owner, and like I was a chef, and then I promoted myself all the way up till I owned the restaurant, and then I bought other restaurants out, and I just was like, I had this goal of like ruling the city as this like corporate entity, not corporate entity, but you know, like just this like powerful business owner. It brought me a lot of joy. And then I had one day where I remember Mr. B saying to me, he's like, you know, you're just sitting there like gardening for hours, and like, I love that you love it, but don't you want to like learn how to garden in real life? Like, or he said something to the extent of like, you know, what about guitar? Because I had said, you know, like, oh, I want to spend some time like replaying guitar, because I was really into it when I was younger. And he just made a simple comment like that. And then I had this like really vivid out of body experience where I was like, I am literally spending hours of my life farming and growing a business in this game when I could be doing it outside of this game. And I never played it again. Oh. I never touched it again until we started streaming and somebody was like, you want to play Sims 3? And I was like, oh God, the addiction's going to be real. But yeah, okay, so games that recently shaped me. Yes, absolutely. The Last of Us! Yeah, that game, holy hell, that game was so good. I wanted to put some games on a short list for the end of the year anyway, so this is really good for me. It helps me kind of try to think of, you know, what were our favorite games in our third year of streaming or first year or whatever. This year, I'd have to say The Last of Us was one that really shaped me. My Renegade run of Mass Effect, which happened, I think, early last year or maybe 2 years ago. I can't remember. But it was recent. And this is going to sound really crazy, but Overwatch.
I could see it, yeah.
Only because I've never played an FPS before. So I only got into computer gaming, really, when I started streaming. Mm-hmm. Because it was easier than hooking up a console and things like that. So I had to learn the controls and get better. And it's great. I've watched myself grow as a gamer pretty significantly from when I started to now, at being able to handle, you know, computer versus the console, and learning to set my mouse sensitivity really, really low so that I can aim properly. Whereas most editors and, you know, photo editors and retouchers and things like that, our sensitivity is ungodly high. Like, yeah, you can't even use the mouse. So that's been quite the adjustment for me. And yeah, Overwatch was my first FPS, and I was worried I would hate it, because I was worried that if I started winning, it would trigger the same anxiety I get when I play competitive or fighting games and things like that. So I was worried about that a lot. But because it's so like, it's kind of a team experience versus just one-on-one, it didn't do that for me. And then I watched myself kind of like get good at that game. Like, I watched myself go from, you know, silver to gold to like high gold, I think, when I stopped. And I was like, I had it in my head, like, I just want to do this for me. I want to get all the way up into diamond just for fun. I want to do that. And then, of course, like wedding season and all that. And I didn't get a chance to play it that often. But it's a game that brought me a lot of joy and showed me that, I'm not limited to indie narrative games, which is unfortunate that that's what the thought is, because limited is an unfortunate word to use there, because indie narrative is my favorite genre. And I don't feel limited by the stories there, but I feel like as a lady, sometimes when people come into the channel and they see I'm only playing indie narrative, I think it's just a good reminder to myself that I can also do FPS games and shoot people and be talented at that, which also I felt with Last of Us as well. That was a very good narrative game, but I also kicked ass at that game on hard mode. Like, I plowed through it and I didn't feel like there was really too much of a struggle, was still able to get lots of headshots and whatnot. And it just like reminded me that, hey, you know, I am still the gamer that used to do shit for fun on hard mode, instead of just sitting through and enjoying a narrative experience. And it's just nice for me to remind myself that there's more to me in the areas of gaming than just just that. I don't know if that answers your question.
It does. It's funny how a game like, you know, and I definitely understand and recognize that there is an unfortunate, you know, societal pressure sort of gender thing happening there, and like I get that. But even I think that there is a part of it that's just sort of in general, you know, I know for me, you know, it was sort of the same thing. Like, I would watch people play Overwatch and I'm like, that's cool, but I could never play this game. Like, I almost felt like there was a part of me that almost felt like I wasn't allowed to touch it because I knew I wasn't going to be very good at it. You know, it was like this, it's like, oh, you're not allowed to play a game like this, like a competitive, like drop in, coordinate with your team. You know, there's not really a story to go along with this. It's just pure competition, and that's it, right? And it's just, it sort of feels like there's this barrier there that you can't quite define, but it's like, it can be really hard to step out of your box so far. And, you know, for somebody like me, I would definitely understand if somebody said, well, it's not really that much of a stretch, right? Because, you know, I play games like Doom and Wolfenstein and, you know, Medal of Honor and stuff like Call of Duty. And it's like, okay, well, and when I say Call of Duty, I mean like the originals on PC, the campaigns, not like the multiplayer, just to be clear. So like, it, you know, it's not really that much of a stretch for me to go and play something like Overwatch or Rainbow Six Siege. But it's like, I don't know what it was. It was just, it felt like a game that, you know, I felt like wasn't mine to enjoy because of the type of game that it was.
I don't know if I have a game that I was like, I'm not going to enjoy this. And then I just blanked there for a second because I was trying to relate to finding a game where I'm like, I'm not so sure I'm going to like this. And then having it surprise me. Was there a game?
See, and it's hard because like you're very open-minded, you know, like I wouldn't really say that there's,
I think in general,
you know, I wouldn't really say that there's like a specific type of game that you would just like automatically dislike. I don't know.
I know this is supposed to be about me, but I'm curious, can you name like 3 to 5 games that you were like, I'm not gonna like this, and then you did? I can think of one. It's not that I thought that I wouldn't like it, it's just I was never really interested in it. Oh my god, how did I forget Subnautica? That is a game that changed my life.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, my god. Sure. Subnautica. Okay, we got to talk about Subnautica. But okay, I was going to say survival. It's not like I didn't like survival because I never really played computer games and there weren't many survival games for, you know, console or anything like that. But when I played my first survival game, I think it was the Solus Project. I fucking loved it. I was like, wow. And then I played a couple more and I realized I really like the survival genre. No Man's Sky, I'm a fucking addict.
Yeah.
And Subnautica was really good. But yeah, we should talk about Subnautica after you talk about some games that surprised you.
I would say the first one that comes to mind is Diablo 3.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with it just being
You didn't think you would like it?
No, I didn't think I would enjoy it at all, honestly. You know, it's that sort of top-down
dungeon crawler
real-time strategy, or dungeon crawler sort of, you know, the games that sort of live in that universe, like Diablo and Starcraft and Command and Conquer, and I sort of end up lumping all those games together, even though of course they are very different, but they all sort of live under that same umbrella of style and strategy that those games are known for, right? But man, Diablo 3 has one of the most incredible narratives I've ever experienced in a video game before, and it just totally threw me off guard. And they did a very good job of making that style of game accessible for who aren't normally comfortable playing something like that.
Diablo 3.
Oh,
I didn't know there was a story. I started it. I think I had like 20 hours in that game.
I just finished the base game. I haven't played the expansions yet, but yes, there is absolutely a narrative, and it is incredible. And it's easy to not pay attention to with a game like that. I totally get it. But yeah, I would say that's definitely one of them. I would also, of course, say Overwatch. Literally, the only reason I own it is because I had people who talked me into buying the game. I remember I was sitting.
Was I one of those people?
No. I owned it before you did.
Okay. Yeah. Because I was gonna say when I finally got into it, I think you were already.
I remember I was at work actually, and the job that I was working at the time, there was a lot of downtime, so I was able to, you know, like sit down and play a game if I wanted to. It usually wasn't a big deal, or like watch a movie, or you know, it was just whatever. It was no big deal. And I was watching Faye Razzle on Twitch. He was playing Overwatch.
Yeah.
And that was like sort of his big game for a while. So I mean, I watched him and it was fun, and you know, he was just like, you know, him and the people in the chat that he was playing with that I also knew just, you know, kept like hounding me, like, try the game, like you'll love it. It's great. And so I just said, you know, fuck it, whatever. And, you know, I paid the $40 and downloaded it and played it for maybe 20 hours and hated it and and just fucking did not pick it up again until they introduced the arcade mode. I feel like...
Oh, yeah, that's right.
The arcade specifically was definitely key in helping the game become more enjoyable for somebody who needed that transition into the competitive aspect. Now I'll go and I'll play comp and, you know, it's like it's fun how intense that can get, and I've learned to appreciate it. But having that arcade mode bridge was helpful. Necessary. Very helpful. Yeah. So even though I initially did not like that game and did not enjoy it, you know, what was it, maybe like a year later or so, I found my love for it, which was very surprising. Man, as far, you know, the problem is it's hard for me to come up with any more options because...
Yeah, that's difficult.
I'm not very open-minded when it comes to games that I'll play. I know it might seem like it, you know, because, you know, I'll go and like, I'll find some really weird shit to play, but
yeah,
all of those games like that I play, they FMV fall under the same umbrella. Great. Exactly. They're FMV games or they're point and click adventures. You know, FMV especially is like my crutch right now. Like I rely on that because, you know, it helps the immersion, and I haven't really stepped as far out of that box as I should have by now, but it's whatever.
I feel like at least when your stream, something that I really love about you and your stream is that I know whatever you're playing is going to be fucking weird and I've never heard of it before. And it's like old and crazy and I just can't look away. Like that. What was that last game that you played? It was a recent game. It wasn't old, but it was super bizarre. I had to go put it up on my iPad in the bedroom while I was sleeping.
Lust for Darkness, the Eyes Wide Shut type game that was going on.
Yeah, porny. Yeah, it was like this weird porny cult sex thing that got like super dark and weird, and I was just could not look away from that train wreck of a game. I was like, what is going to happen next? So I love that you don't. I love that you do that. I love that those are games I can count on for you. One of the games that surprised me this year was that one game that we did a podcast episode about, Tender Loving Care. That surprised the hell out of me. I never would have picked up a game like that on my own, but I really enjoyed watching you play it. It was crazy. I love that you do that. Okay, so I'm going to talk about Subnautica really quickly.
Yes.
And then we can wrap this episode. Subnautica. So for those of you listening, I am terrified of the deep, deep ocean abyss. Not really the abyss so much. I mean, being surrounded by darkness is super scary, but I actually find the idea of being in open water where it's just blue as far as the eye can see, either up or down or specifically like below me, to be very terrifying. I can't really. So when Subnautica came out, I was like, well, there's a survival game I'm never going to play because it's literally you in the deep, deep ocean and you have to survive. And I can't do that. Yeah. And I remember saying those words specifically. Oh, that's not a game for me, even though I want to try to get more into the survival genre because I've been really enjoying it. I can't do that. And that's the first time I ever said that about a game ever. Because I remember, you know, Echo, back to Echo and all that stuff. It never occurred to me that I couldn't do that. It was like a game. So someone can beat it, so I can do it. It never occurred to me that I couldn't. So that was the first game where I was ever like, oh, I can't do that. I can't play that game, period. it's just not going to happen. And then we tried. I tried the first time, and I never left the shallow waters where it was like I would have a panic attack if I, you know, it was just awful. It was not a great experience. And then I went to Hawaii for the first time, and I went swimming with wild dolphins.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it was an accident. It was like, we were out snorkeling in the bay and then they just came by to play. Boy, that was an experience. And I decided that I wanted to be able to get over this crazy fear I had of this deep water, not get over, but at least like face it right. In a profound way, because I'm sure there's some fucked up reason why I don't like it. And I'm just not prepared to delve that deep into my psyche. But I basically came home and the first game I played when I got home was Subnautica. I booted it up again and I was like, you know what? We're going to try this again. And we played through that entire game, even though it was scary, even though I had moments where that fucking glitch where I fell off the edge of the abyss and plummeted like to 29,000 feet below sea level. And I wanted to cry. And like, I was screaming the entire time, even moments like that, I got through the entire game and I was so proud. I was like, I did it. And then because of that game, the next time I went back to Hawaii, I got on a boat and I went out into the middle of the fucking ocean and I got in the water. And I looked down and I had that panic attack and I was like, it's fine. It's cool. You know, it's just like Subnautica. Well, without the Reapers and scary shit. But yes, it's great. And then the moment that happened, some fucking pilot whales came out. And for those of you who don't know, pilot whales are carnivorous, so you don't want to move. And literally everyone was like, okay, everybody's just starfish right now. These are pilot whales and they're carnivorous and they will attack you if they feel like they're threatened. So just don't move. So then I'm like, I'm going to pee myself right here in the great vast ocean. I'm just going to like freak out because these are big, scary creatures. But then two of them came up to look at us. They like slowly floated by and I'm there starfishing like in full panic mode. And its eye looked right at me, man. It probably had never seen humans before. And I just like looked at it and it looked at me and I was calm. I was still. And then they swam away and it was gone. My panic was gone. And I was like, okay, that was super cool.
That's terrifying.
That was great. I probably won't get in the water again. Also, during that trip on the boat, after the pilot whale came by, there were other people out just swimming further away. Like, I was still relatively close to the boat. Let's be real. I'm paranoid. There were other people out there swimming, one of which was my friend, and a big oceanic white-tipped shark was coming behind the pilot whales, because pilot whales are messy eaters. When they do eat, they just like leave scraps of the fish or whatever it is that they're eating like in the, you know, behind them. And so oceanic white-tipped sharks will follow behind for an easy meal. So a white-tipped shark was actually coming in and like following behind some of the people. Yeah, and they got pictures of it, and it's ugly. Like, if you think the jaw shark, I know the jaw shark is the great white, but man, if this shark is scary looking. Anyway, I was like, I'm never getting in the water again. That was horrifying. The fact that it was following my friend like all the way back to the boat again, probably had never seen humans before. So it was a good thing that, you know, the people over there were experienced swimmers who had been in the water millions of times. So they knew to just kind of act big and don't run away and don't get scared. Don't act like prey so that this shark doesn't learn that, you know, these humans are food you can eat, was really important. But then at that moment I was like, are you kidding me? Like, what are the odds that these super rare creatures are like, yeah, it was just nuts. It was nuts. But yeah, anyway, it was a great experience. Subnautica was great. Changed my life. Now we can wrap.
Oh my god, it's just, it makes me think though, like,
oh my god,
shit like that, that it's just like, man, this is this moment, this thing that's happening right now, it's just like too perfect of a setup for, you know, like this big moment in your life. And it's just, it's, I don't know, it's,
yeah.
And this is, again, this is another conversation that just like will probably never happen, or definitely doesn't need to happen today. But it's just like, out of all of the days and all of the times and, you know, all of the boat rides that have happened with no pilot whales, and then all of the sudden, like, you being PB, being this person who is totally terrified of the deep ocean and of doing exactly that thing and encountering exactly this thing and having exactly this experience. You know, it's just, it's so weird to think about, like, the chance of that.
I thought about it a lot on that boat ride back. I thought about it a lot, especially because the captain kept saying, like, the captain was like squeeing, for lack of a better, more eloquent word. He was just so excited. He said, he kept saying, like, I know you guys don't know how rare this is. And like, there are scientists who study pilot whales who have never had a chance to see them before.
Wow.
Because they're so rare, and encountering them is super incredible. It might not be pilot. It might've been pygmy. So this is insane. This is nuts. We saw pilot whales and pygmy whales in like a span of 3 days. Wow. I don't know if they were migrating or it just happened to be weird, but there was another day that we went out into the ocean, and there was another oceanic white tip shark swimming among dolphins. Like, it was just a really wild trip where we saw a lot of wildlife by chance. I misspoke. So for those of you listening, the pilot whales was rare, but the pygmy whales were even rarer, and we saw those as well. And he was freaking out, just saying like, he ended up calling the scientists on the island to be like, here's where we are. And they just went by us. So, you know, and they're like rushing to get their equipment and then to try to like find them and study them. So that's just crazy to me. That's just, it's just crazy. To think that that's, a small, tiny percentage of people in the world have seen this creature in real life, and I got to do it. That's really humbling and just super cool, and just reminds me that I am tiny and also big, and just a lot of different feelings all at once. But I definitely, on that boat ride back, I was like, what are the fucking odds of that? Like, that's incredible. And then I wrote this like really emotional tweet to the Subnautica team that I don't think they ever saw, but I didn't care. It was just like, I realize that this is super cheesy and you probably think I'm a crazy person saying this game changed my life, but it really did. And I would not have been able to get in the water had I not played Subnautica all the way through up until this point, or before, or it was after. It was my second trip. Yep. Anyway, wow. Thanks for chatting with me.
Hey, no problem.
Hearing my goddamn life story.
As always.
This was really cool.
Yeah, it was.
So I think I will take the opportunity to say to the listeners today that we will probably be taking a holiday break. We're not going to stop creating episodes of The Deep Dive, but it's proving a little tricky to find guests around the holidays to come on to a weekly podcast where we're producing something every week. So we'll probably take a couple weeks off here. We'll resume after the holidays, and we'll have some really badass episodes for you. Some more dives ahead. So thank you for listening. And once again, thank you, Captain, for being a kick-ass co-host. And thank you, divers, for being a part of it. The Deep Dive Podcast is brought to you by PBTV. And you can find us at deepdivecast.com, as well as on Twitter and Instagram at deepdivecast. If you like what you hear, please consider rating and reviewing the show on iTunes. And you can also become a patron of the show by visiting us at deepdivecast.com/support. Patrons receive various perks like monthly black and white wallpaper, high quality versions of each episode, bonus episode content, and of course, the knowledge that you directly are keeping the Deep Dive afloat. See you next time, divers. Podcast is proudly part of the Geek Generation Network. For more podcasts about your favorite geeky things like games or your favorite shows, browse our whole library at thegeekgeneration.com.